over what we discussed last time. We spoke about the fact that when the Eden went after the Churban of the first Beis HaMikdash, they went into Bavel, and we mentioned that even after they went back to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Beis HaMikdash, Rav of the Eden remained in Bavel. Not only that, but in the time of the Churban of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Eden did not only go to Bavel, but they went to many different places in the world, all over, so to say, the known world at that time. And they remained there. Most of them remained in those different countries and did not return to build the second Beis HaMikdash, did not return during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. This is very important because we have to understand that while we're going to discuss, when we're going to discuss what was going on in the second Beis HaMikdash and all of the difficulties that were going on there, in a country like Bavel, the Eden lived in relative peace and in relative comfort, and Torah flourished in Bavel. And as we explained, Torah flourished in Bavel because of the Cheresh HaMazger that came there before the Churban, before the main, the bulk of the Eden came up into Bavel. So there were always yeshivas in Bavel. And for the next 1,000 years, there was always Torah in Bavel. And the Gemara talks about, from time to time, Gdolei Olam, as an example, Hillel HaZaken, who came up from Bavel, came back into Eretz Yisrael, to help to be Mechazik, the Eden living in Eretz Yisrael. So Bavel had a tremendous yeshiva, a Torah yeshiva in Bavel, even during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. So that's one very important nekuda. The second issue that we spoke about was, why didn't the Eden come back to, in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash? And we said that the reason that they didn't go back was because they were concerned about the Gimel Shavuos that we mentioned. The Gemara says, Mark Subis, that says that it's usher to go back to Eretz Yisrael in force to set up a government, your own government in Eretz Yisrael, until the time of the Pekida, until the time that that's the designated time to go back to Eretz Yisrael. And it was questionable to everybody, if, or to most, if this was the Pekida, if this is the time that we're supposed to go back to Eretz Yisrael. They were able to go back to Eretz Yisrael because the Melech of Paras Madai gave them Rishus to go back and to build the Beis HaMikdash, but they didn't know if Min HaShemayim, their Maskim, the Ribbono Shel Olam is Maskim, they should go back, and therefore they were concerned about this, the Gimel Shavuos that the Gemara refers to. We saw the Ramban in the Sefer HaGeula, who says that that's the reason why none of the Aseres HaShvatim came back, because they were afraid of the Gimel Shavuos, and they understood that even those who would could go back to Eretz Yisrael was only from Golas Yehuda. And then we also mentioned the Pnei Yeshua, who brought different Maramakimis, that the Abar Benel, that said that very clearly that the understanding was that the time of the second Beis HaMikdash wasn't an Emes HaPekida, it wasn't a Geula. It wasn't a Geula because they were first able to get back because the Melech of Paras Umadai allowed them to go back, and they were always under the control of either Melech Paras Umadai. We're going to learn from there they went to the hands of the Yevonim, from there they went to the hands of the Romans. And so therefore, the second Beis HaMikdash was really never a Zman of Geula, and therefore they felt it was also to go back. Also we mentioned that could very well be that Ezra HaSefer also understood that it wasn't a Zman of Geula, but it definitely was a Zman that Klal Yisrael had to sort of pull itself together to be Mechazik itself, in order to be able to face up to the Golus that we're in right now. And it was actually what happened in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash that made it possible to this great phenomenon that we see today. We are a nation of people that's 2,000 years in Golis, going from place to place, and how are we able to survive? So of course, tremendous Siyata Deshmaya, there are Nisim and Nifloys that were able to survive. But also, a lot of groundwork, so to say, was put in by the Chachomim in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, beginning with the Anshei Knesset HaGdoila, and throughout the Tkufas HaTanoim that we're going to learn about, Mirtz Hashem, which was put into action, was put into place primarily for this reason, to be Mechazik Klal Yisrael, to prepare Klal Yisrael, so that we should be able to face up to the Golus that was in front of us, and we should be able to succeed in the Golus that was facing us. Before we go back to talk about the finishing of the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, we discussed Zerubbabel, we discussed Ezra, and we have to also discuss Nehemiah and the Anshei Knesset HaGdoila. But before we do that, I want to discuss a very, very important nekuda that took place in this time, which had a tremendous impact on all of world history. Not only did it have an impact, but it explains many, many difficulties in understanding history that the Weltaka doesn't understand. It's such strange happenings, many different strange things that go on in history that are not understood in the secular world. But with the insight that we get from the Gemara, so we're able to have a tremendous understanding of different things that took place in the last 2,500 years. So we'll begin as follows. We all know that going back about 2,500 years ago, the people, and we're talking about the Goyish Welt, Rachman Islam, I guess to a certain degree, we're talking about the influence that took place on the Yiddish Welt, believed in the Avodah Zarah, believed in idols. Different countries had different idols. We know this, the worshipping of Avodah Zarah, we know from our Svarim, we know from the Sifrei Nevi'im that we have, we know it from the Divrei Musar that come from the Nevi'im, where the Nevi'im constantly gave Musar to Klal Yisrael not to be Avdei Avodah Zarah. And again, we see this in the secular books also, how people served the Avodah Zarah. I'm sure that everybody is familiar, anybody who went through high school is familiar with the books, the Iliad and the Odyssey, where they describe the different Greek gods and the different adventures that people had as they interacted with the gods. And what we need to understand is that even in the secular world, they wonder what happened 2,500 years ago when all of this came to an end. People stopped believing in the gods, the so-called gods. Again, we have these books that were written by Homer. We have other books that come out of different countries. And all of this starts going back 2,500 years ago. All of this starts on to decline. And it becomes very noticeable that people stopped believing. Little by little, it spread throughout the world. People stopped believing in the Avodah Zarah. We also find, approximately in this same time, that there was something new that came onto the world, and that was the philosophers. Specifically, people like Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. Socrates was more or less of the earliest of the philosophers, and Socrates brought into Greece the idea that we should stop to think about different things and not to accept this which was accepted in the previous generations. People accepted different things in the world. Socrates said, no, we have to stop and understand it. Think. People have to stop and to think. And the truth of the matter is, he made a big tumult over there in Greece. That ultimately, because of his influence, the Greeks insisted, so to say, that he take poison himself and kill himself, because he was, as they thought, poisoning the minds of the youth, getting them to question everything and getting them to rethink all that was accepted in the previous generations. He passed on his teachings to Plato, which took a lot of this, these teachings of Socrates, the questioning and the reshuffling of ideas, and tried to make them into more practical, to apply them in a practical way, the establishments of governments and of other things. And what we need to understand is that in every world that existed, even in our world, even in the Yiddish Welt, a person like Plato was respected for his knowledge, for his ability to be able to think things through. So, although it was, of course, no comparison to what we have in Chochmas HaTorah, to the Havdil of Chochmas HaTorah, but Chochma Bagoyim Tamin, and the Chochma of Socrates and Plato was respected. Their student was really the greatest of the ancient philosophers, and that was Aristotle. And we need to know that even many of our philosophical books, Svarim like the Mori Nevuchim, take a lot of their philosophical thoughts from a person like Aristotle. And you find amongst the Rishonim talking with, in one way, with great respect for a person like Aristotle. Of course, at the same time, we're very, very critical of a person like Aristotle. With his great chokhmah, he made many tremendous mistakes, which we'll discuss, refused to accept the true emunah, which we are going to discuss, but at the same time, he's respected by such Rishonim as the Rambam for the great chokhmah that he brought onto the world. So what we see is a decline in the belief in the Avodah Zarah, and at the same time, we see an elevation, or the beginning of the belief in, or the advancement of a philosophy. We need now to understand, where did this all come from? How did this happen? At the same time, I want to put in another issue that perhaps is not as important, but it's also a very good question. How is it that all of this chokhmah happened to spring up in a country like Greece? And we're soon going to see that not only did the Greeks advance in the world of philosophy, but also in the natural sciences. Chokhmah all of a sudden sprung up in Greece. Now, some would say that perhaps the Greeks were of a superior intelligence. I don't know why we would think so, but maybe that's what we should understand, that somehow the Greeks have superior intelligence. But if one looks after that period of time, after that tkufa, we don't see that the Greeks have any particular genius in the Greek people. Even till today, does anybody know of any major scientists that come out of the country of Greece? I don't think that they have less, perhaps, than others, but surely not more, and perhaps even less, than different countries. So one can't, therefore, possibly think to himself that there's something special about the Greek people, that they all of a sudden had these philosophers, and all of a sudden they had these great scientists. One of the philosophers, by the way, that I forgot to mention that lived in Greece, was a person whose name was Epicurus, and he had a very interesting philosophy. His philosophy was, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow will be no more. He had a philosophy that a person lives only in this world, and that after a person dies, there is no afterlife. A person does not have to give a din v'cheshbon for what he's done in this world. So therefore, if you could steal without getting caught, or if you could do something that society accepts as being wrong, and you do it in such a way that you can convince yourself that you're not harming the other person, or even if you're harming the other person, but the important thing is you don't get caught. So why not? All you have to live for is life in this world, and if you get away with it, who's going to know the difference? He goes down in history as, in our understanding also, this great philosopher Epicurus, as the word we use for Apicurus. And that's the reason why. Because this is Apicurus, that believed, as I mentioned, eat, drink, and be merry, tomorrow be no more. There's no schar v'einish, there's no hagacha protis. So he's the one that came up with this concept that I kind of figured that this would be something to be very, very pleasant for people, make life sort of more fun for the people that were living it. Again, we need to understand how is it that these philosophers all of a sudden came, and how come they came in Greece. And once again, I want to stress this, because this is something we have to understand when we study history. Nothing comes out of nowheres. No such thing. All of a sudden, somebody springs up with, and all of a sudden, he's turning the world upside down. These things don't happen. Nothing happens like that. Nothing happens from one day to another. And if you do see it happening, you have to question, how did it happen? Nobody comes from a world of Avodah Zarah and all of a sudden becomes a genius overnight and sits and develops all kinds of theories back. Things develop over years. Years and years, things develop. And so therefore, we have to stop to understand what was going on in the world at that time, and specifically what was going on in Greece at that time. As we mentioned, not only did the natural scientists, not only did the philosophers exist in Greece at that time, but also the natural scientists started their teachings in Greece at that time. Now, we're talking about mathematics, the Pythagorean theorem. Everybody knows A squared plus B squared equals C squared. So this all was introduced at that time. The introduction of the study of medicine. People before that time said that if a person got sick, it was because of some kind of a spiritual thing that he got sick, and there wasn't much that they could do for him except perhaps sometimes they brought different sacrifices or whatever, but that a disease should have a natural cause. They didn't know about germs at that time, but that disease should have a natural cause. So this understanding was introduced in Greece at that time. We know, as I mentioned, algebra, geometry, Archimedes taught us how to measure the circumference of a circle. They started using the different principles that we have in physics today. So, if anybody is upset that you have to study physics, you could blame it on the Greeks, because they're the ones who started using gears and levers and machines, using the different principles of physics. And they started developing this. Where did all this come from? We know in the secular history, in the year 480 approximately BCE, and before the Common Era, the Greeks, under the leadership of Athens, introduced the concept of democracy, and they also put a stress on education. So, once again, we have this question. The philosophers, the natural scientists, and why in Greece? All of this is a question that comes together, that comes to mind at this time, and we're wondering, how did this all come together at this time and in this place? What we need first to come to terms with is that when we're talking about approximately 2,500 years ago, we're talking about Churban Bayis Rishon. Churban Bayis, which took place approximately 2,500 years ago, and Churban Bayis Rishon had, first of all, a tremendous impact on world history because Yidden was spread throughout the world. As we mentioned, the Yidden were leaving Eretz Yisrael, and they started going to all the different countries, the world that was known at that time, going to the different countries throughout the world. So that's the first thing, the first impact that the Churban of the first Beis HaMikdash had, the introducing Yidden, and not only Yidden, but the Chochmah that Yidden had to the different countries of the world. That's the first thing that we think. Now, the second thing is that the Gemara tells us, and this is a Gemara that's found, it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, and Daf Samach Dalet, Gemara in Yuma, Daf Samach Tes, Samach Beis. The Gemara talks about how, when it came time for Yidden to return to build the second Beis HaMikdash, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah came together and they said as follows. They said, the first Beis HaMikdash was Chorev because of the Aveira of Avodah Zarah. And as I explained, even though the Gemara says it's Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shlichas Damim, but all of this really came about through the Avodah Zarah. It was through the Avodah Zarah that everything else was on a decline. So the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah said that if the first Beis HaMikdash was Chorev because of the Aveira of Avodah Zarah, how can we possibly think that we could succeed in the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, that there shouldn't be spread of Avodah Zarah throughout Eretz Yisrael? If the earlier generations couldn't cope, so to say, with the Eitzar of Avodah Zarah, how will the people in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash be able to cope with this Avodah Zarah? And because of this, they came together and they decided that they're going to be mevatel the Eitzah Hara of Avodah Zarah. Now, to tell you exactly what this means, or even how they did it, even though the Gemara describes a little bit how they did it and what it looked like when they did it, but of course, this is from Sisrei Torah, and there's no way we could possibly understand it, but somehow they came together, they were mespalo, they were using different tefillis, they were matzliach to be mevatel the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. So now they felt that at least we had a chance, so to say, that to succeed with the second Beis HaMikdash without the spread of Avodah Zarah, because now this burning desire that was found within people, and again, which is something, of course, that we can understand, and if you remember, we mentioned that Menashe came to a cholam to Rav Ashi, because Rav Ashi was so critical of Menashe, and he told him, the Melech Menashe, and he was saying that Menashe went and he spread Avodah Zarah throughout Eretz Yisrael. How could he do such a terrible thing? And Menashe came to a cholam to Rav Ashi, and he told Rav Ashi that if you would have been in our time, you would have picked up your kapota, you would have picked up your coat to run after the Avodah Zarah. So strong was the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. And again, this is something that we can't possibly understand. But so strong was the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah that it overcame just about everybody. A good deal of the Yidden living in Eretz Yisrael were overcome by this Yetzirah. And so now that this Yetzirah was abolished, so they felt that now we have a chance to succeed in the second Beis HaMikdash. Now, again, we understand that being that the Gemara tells us that this took place in the Tkufa of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, so we are able to pinpoint this in world history. Where do the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah fit into world history? So we have to understand as follows, that the first Kohen Gadol that was found in Eretz Yisrael in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash was Shimon HaTzadik. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us that Shimon HaTzadik hoya mishiorei Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. He was from what was left over of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah right before the Tkufas HaTanoim. So we understand that the Tkufa of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah took place in the Zman before the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, and in Shimon HaTzadik, who was from the youngest of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, right away in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. But that whole Tkufa, the 70 or 80 years before that, that was the Tkufa of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, who made different takonis that we spoke about a little bit, and we'll just speak in Yirtzeh Hashem to speak about more. And it was in that Tkufa that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah mevatel the Yetzirah of Avodah Zarah. We know from our secular history that Alexander the Great traveled all over the known world, conquering the world. Alexander the Great had a teacher, and his teacher was Aristotle. And that we know again from our secular history, that Alexander the Great took with him Aristotle when he went to wage his different battles. The Gemara tells us that when Aristotle came to Eretz Yisrael, he met up with Shimon HaTzadik. And the Gemara gives a whole arichas about how Shimon HaTzadik went out to greet Aristotle. People were afraid. Alexander was going around conquering the world, and now he was coming into Eretz Yisrael, and he was ready to conquer Eretz Yisrael also. And everybody was afraid of him, understandably so, that he's going to conquer Eretz Yisrael. And so Shimon HaTzadik went out to greet Alexander. And this also, we will discuss a little bit later, had a tremendous impact on our future. The leader of the Jewish people, so to say, the one who was chosen to meet up with this conqueror was the same person who was the Kohen Gadol. And that sort of was kaveya, the fact that the Kohen Gadol, from this point on, was considered to be the leader of the Jewish people. Now, this Kohen Gadol, Shimon HaTzadik, went out to meet up with Alexander, and the Gemara tells us that Alexander refused to harm him, or to harm the Eden, because he said that before he went to battle, in his dreams he saw that Shimon HaTzadik was there and somehow was helpful in him being able to succeed in his battles. So we now know, to put together Alexander, and important is Aristotle, with the Shiori Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And as I mentioned, Aristotle was the third generation of philosophers, his teacher being Plato, and his teacher being Socrates. So now we know that when we talk about the beginning of the philosophers, We're talking about them taking place in the Tkufa of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, who are the same people that were mevatel the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. Okay, so we got this Cheshbon. This Cheshbon all comes together. The philosophers lived in the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, and when we ask the question, why did the philosophers all of a sudden come onto the world? Why did people stop believing in their so-called gods in the Avodah Zarah? And how come all of a sudden they were searching for answers of what life was all about? And how come that brought about the philosophers? So the answer is because in the history of the world, that was the Tkufa of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, who were mevatel the Yetzirah of Avodah Zarah. People now did not know what life was all about. People did not know if this world is it, and that when a person dies, he does not have to give a din v'cheshbon. They didn't know if there's anything else that controls their life. They didn't know anything. And so they went to search for answers. And in the searching for the answers, so that brought about the philosophers. Now let's keep this in mind, because it's not our subject right now, but as we study, we're going to see different religions that sprung up at that time, after that time, so to say. And these different religions spread very, very quickly throughout the world. And I'm talking about Christianity and Islam. And it's unbelievable how and why did these religions spread so quickly. Now we have a bit of an answer, because people were left in the dark. People did not know what to believe in. Until this time, this wasn't a problem. Their belief was the Avodah Zarah. But now, all of a sudden, they're left without a belief. The philosophers, well, they were, in their explanation of what life and death and the physical world and the spiritual world is all about, well, it wasn't really too popular, especially with the common people. And so people were searching for the meaning of life. We're going to learn that it's because of that in the next couple of hundred years, it was common for people to convert, to become Gerim, to convert to Yiddishkeit, to become Gerim. Because the only belief that was found in the world that had solid backing at all was Terem in HaShemayim, because of the fact that 600,000 people, and it's more than 600,000 people, this is only from 20 to 60 of the Zecharim, so we're talking about approximately at least 2 million people who got together, stood on Har Sinai, and heard Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and so forth and so on, who went out of Mitzrayim, saw the Nisim v'Nefloyis, saw Hashkocha Protis, saw the Yad Hashem, saw Schar v'Einish, heard direct from the Bari Olam about the Inyan of Olam Hazeh and Olam Habo. This was the only thing that was found in the world that was, like we would say, that had a solid basis to it that was indisputable. And people were searching. And therefore, they gravitated towards Torah min HaShemayim, towards what we believe in. And we're going to learn that, being that to accept Tayag Mitzvahs, which was something that was perhaps something that they weren't willing to accept, all of Tayag Mitzvahs, so they went to look for different variations, so to say, to make it a little bit more digestible, let's call it, for them. But that's for future lectures. But what we need now to understand is why there was such a yearning and such a searching to look for an emunah, to look for a belief. And that's the reason why, because the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah we're mevatel the yitzhar of avodah zara. There's a Gemara in Chulin, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, and the Gemara says that we find that there are different people that still believe in the avodah zaras. And the Gemara says, calls it minig aviseyim biyudeyim. And I think that the best way to translate that is to say that it was the culture of the time. We have it today also. There are people that believe in different religions, and they talk about a man that climbs down chimneys once a year, and they hang trees in their houses, and they do all different kinds of things. But to say that they actually believe in it, there's nobody that believes in it, but it's part of the, you know, it's part of the culture. The religion brings with it a certain social interaction, a certain culture, something that they enjoy that comes together with it, makes it fun, makes it exciting. And so that even though people didn't truly believe, and even till today, there are a lot of things that go to know what people really believe in. It's more or less what they do because it's part of their, again, a part of their culture, and therefore they follow it. So therefore the Gemara says that, the Gemara tells us of this, that you don't really see the Avodah Zarah, but what you're seeing is this culture that came with the Avodah Zarah that was still going on at that time. Now, okay, so is this understood? Everybody's with me? We now need to understand the second phenomenon, that why Greece? Why of all places Greece? And as we said, not that the Greeks are less intelligent, but surely not more intelligent than everybody else. So why in Greece? Now that's a question that's answered in the Sefer and the Kuzari. Kuzari is a very basic philosophical Sefer that we have, written by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi approximately 1,000 years ago. There in Chelek Aleph, Simen Samach Gimel, and this is what he explains. He says as follows, and we're going to elaborate a bit on it just to give it some understanding. In the Psukim in Malachim, Malachim Aleph, Perig, Hey, the Torah talks about the fact that Shlomo HaMelech became the Melech in Eretz Yisrael after David HaMelech. And the Psukim tell us that Shlomo HaMelech was a tremendous king, and he wanted to be a very, very good king. And he was mispal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give him Hatzlocha as a Melech. And we all know the story that Shlomo HaMelech had a Cholam, and in this Cholam he asked for Chochma, and he was granted Chochma. And the Pasuk in Perek Hey, Pasuk Tes, tells us, Vayiten Elokim Chochma L'Shlomo, Usfuna Harbe Me'od, V'roichav Lev Kachoel Asher Sfas Hayom. He had tremendous Chochma, Chochma that was perhaps beyond the Chochma that was found with anybody in that time, and Chochma's reputation spread throughout the world. The Pasuk tells us that it was the Chochma was greater than the Chochma Asperei Kedem and all of the Chochma that was found in Mitzrayim. So we see already from the Psukim that we're not only talking about Chochma Satera, because if we're saying that Shlomo HaMelech was a Chochm greater than the Chachomim of Bnei Kedem and the Chachomim of Mitzrayim, so obviously we're not only talking about Chochma Satera, we're talking about even the Chachomim of the secular world. In Pasuk Yud Gimel it says, Vayedaber al ha'etzim, he spoke about the trees, min ha'erez, and erez they touch the cedar trees, asher belavonin, v'ad ha'ezoiv asher yoytze bakir. And he spoke about the ezoiv, the different plant of ezoiv that comes out of the wall. Obviously, this is a type of a moss, perhaps, or some type of a weed that comes out of the walls. So he spoke about the huge trees that were found in Lebanon, in Levanon, and he also spoke about even the weeds that would come out of the walls. Vayedaber al habehemov, al ha'oif, val haremes, val hadogim. He spoke about the behemoths and the oifos, and about the things that crawl, and about the fish. And the pasuk tells us, "Vayavoyu mikol ha'amim lishmayas chokmashloim." They came from all over to hear chokmashloim. Now we need to understand what did he talk about? What is this that he was talking about? That Shlomo HaMelech was talking about when he spoke about the trees and the weeds and the animals and the birds, and what was it? The fish. What was he talking about? What was the thing that he was talking about? Now, of course, there are midrashim in Chazal, but if we look even to the Ralbag, the way he says simple pshat in the pasuk, and this is also the pshat that the Kuzri mentions, what it means is that he had deep understanding, deep scientific understanding, scientific knowledge of all of the phenomena of nature. So if somebody is going to think to himself that if you have the cedar trees and you have very, very tall trees, the tree goes all the way up in Hashemayim. I mean, I don't know if we have cedar trees, but if we have palm trees, right? And the palm tree stands like a twig very high up in the air, and on the top of the tree you have green leaves, green branches that come out of the top of the tree. Now we know that there's such a, and we know that obviously there's moisture there because that's what makes it green. And we also know that there's such a thing as gravity. And we also know that the moisture that's on the top of the tree, how did it get there? It doesn't, when it rains on the top of the tree, the moisture from the rain doesn't go into the branches. It rains on the ground, and from the ground it goes into the roots, and it travels up to the top of the tree. How does it travel up to the top of the tree? The gravity doesn't let things travel. If you stand on the floor next to the palm trees and you try to throw a ball up so high, like some of those palm trees, you can't do it. It's too tall. Then you can. Then you can't. Depends, I guess, how tall it is. But it will be quite a feat to be able to throw something as high as the top of a real tall tree. And the reason is because the gravitational pull that pulls the ball back down. So the question is, so how does the dampness get to the top of the tree? Void, if every once in a while, when the wind blows over here, it doesn't happen too often, but it happens, and the wind blows, and if you walk outside, and if the tree is a live tree, it's not dying, and you look at those palm trees and they're swaying in the wind, back and forth, swaying in the wind, and they don't fall over. And it goes on and on. I go through a whole night like that, back and forth and back and forth, very strong. It doesn't pull out of the ground. What holds it into the ground? And what makes those the trees that grow so tall, what makes it so strong that it's able to hold on to the wind? And if you have a tree that has these huge branches that come out of it, so how is it so strong that those branches hold on for years and years and years, or centuries sometimes? You have a tree holding on to a branch that the branch itself weighs hundreds and perhaps even thousands of pounds. And the tree is so strong, it grabs a hold of that branch and it doesn't let the branch fall, and the tree, the weight of the tree is tilted towards one direction where the branches are coming out, and yet the roots that are in the ground are able to hold on to it with such strength, and not for a minute or for an hour, but for years and years, perhaps even hundreds of years. So how does such a thing happen? You stand and you wonder, how does such a thing happen? And if one goes and you can do the same thing, we're going through all the different phenomena that you have in nature. How is it that the birds, where from the moment that they're born, they know how to fly, and we spend our whole lives flapping our hands up and down and jumping off the edge of the table, and we can't get anywhere. It just doesn't go. We just can't figure it out, how to do it. And they're born and they're able to do it. And we know that there are birds that migrate thousands and thousands of miles, and arayim, they can't figure this out. They migrate. They use the stars to migrate. In order to figure out in which direction to navigate the miles over the ocean. Well, who taught the bird how to navigate? It took people thousands of years to learn navigation. Even in Columbus's time, it was a ganze kunst to be a navigator. And here you have a nivra that has the brain of a bird, and he knows he has a natural, the ability to get from one place to another. And so forth and so on. And we can go on and on and on and on. We could spend a lifetime discussing this. How do all of these things happen? How do they take place? And the truth of the matter is that people did not know. Shlomo HaMelech, he understood it all. He had this tremendous wisdom. And on top of that, he had something else also. He knew, for instance, as the Ralbag says, that in which of these different weeds or different trees or different animals even is found, let's call it a chemical, that if a person ingests these chemicals, he's able to heal himself from different diseases. He knew what grass or whatever to use as an antidote for different problems and different issues that plague people. I guess we would call that medicine, huh? We call that medicine today. So he knew about that also. So he knew all of what we would call today the natural sciences. He knew math, he knew chemistry, he knew physics, he knew medicine, he knew it all. And he got it as a matana from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And as the Pasuk says, people came, mikol ha'amim lishmoy es chochma shloimoy, they came from all over the world in order to hear chochma shloimoy, because this was news to them. And he used this chokhmah in order to spread the godliness of the Bari Olam in the Bria. He used this chokhmah in order to show people the chesed and the rachamim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has on his Bria. Perhaps he spoke about, and I'm sure he spoke about millions of things more, but he spoke about the fact that you have fruits that grow on the top of a tree, and if you want to get the fruit down, well, you can climb to the top of the tree, but there's a problem, because if you climb to the top of the tree, so you may chalila fall and you can hurt yourself. But the Bari Olam, Barav Chasda, he made it so that there's no need to climb to the top of the tree. If the fruit does not fall off of the tree by itself, it's only because it's not ripe. But when the fruit will become ripe, so then it'll fall down by itself. And how do you know? So you don't have to climb to the top of the tree. And how do you know that the fruit is not ripe? Because it doesn't have the apple doesn't have the red color. The apple is green until it's ripe. And when the apple is ripe, and then it gets a nice red color, and then it falls off of the tree. And so forth and so on. And again, we can go on with this and endless amount of times. We could talk about how the whales navigate and how they have the ability to swim through oceans and so forth and so on. And he spoke about this all. He spoke about the chesed in the Bria. He spoke about the tremendous chachma in the Bria. He spoke about how we could see the hashgacha in the Bria found in all of these different nivroim. and he used it in order to spread the understanding and the belief of HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout the Bria. As it says that when Mashiach ultimately is going to come, and Shlomo HaMelech wanted to bring Mashiach, he wanted that the whole world should understand and should realize the gewaldige Hashgacha and the Metzias of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Bria. So he used the spreading of the Deya, of the Chochma, of the Metzias of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Bria, in order to bring people closer and closer into the belief and the understanding and the acceptance of the Bari Olam. And we'll study a little bit further how he went about doing this, what other steps he took in order to do this. But what we're learning here is that Shlomo HaMelech, when we talk about the Gewaldige Chochma that he had, one aspect of that Gewaldige Chochma was the Chochma of the natural sciences. And the fact that he taught the natural sciences to the different people that were found in the Bria. Now, we have more time? Now, what the Kuzri says is as follows, that Shlomo HaMelech developed schools, so to say, in Eretz Yisrael, where he taught the people, he taught his Talmidim, these different Chochmas. And it was found always in Eretz Yisrael. He was always found in Eretz Yisrael, his Talmidim and Talmidei Talmidim, people that were constantly developing these different Chochmas. And the Kuzri tells us that in the time, these schools always existed, these yeshivas where they learned Gavlus HaBeirei with a stress on the Chochmas HaBriya always existed. And the Kuzri tells us that in the time of the second of the Churban of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Talmidim of these yeshivas, these particular types of yeshivas, when they went into Golis, they landed up in Greece. The country that they landed up in was Greece. So now we have to stop here for a second and put together this puzzle that we're trying to develop. After the Churban of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Anshei Knesset HaGdoila were mevatel the Yetzahara of Avodah Zarah. And that brought about the philosophers. And we said the philosophers sprung up in Greece. Why did they spring up in Greece? Because that's where these Chachomim, and soon we'll discuss the scientists, but at the moment we're talking about the Chachomim, the people who understood who had a philosophical understanding of what's going on in the world, where they went. They went to Greece. Not only that, but what we need to understand is that in the time of the Avdei Avodah Zarah, the Chochma that was used by the people was that people used in order to develop different things was the Chochma that came through the Avodah Zarah, that we'll elaborate more soon, and that was the Chochma of the Koiches HaTumah. That was the Chochma that was used. And with the destruction, with the abolishment of the Avodah Zarah, the Koich HaTumah that went along with the Avodah Zarah, the Kishuv that was used by people at that time, also started on a decline. And people needed different types of Chochmas in order to continue developing different things in the world. And again, we'll soon explain this more. So therefore, all of this came together in Greece, because in Greece was the country that these Chachamim that were found in Eretz Yisrael as a result of the teaching of Shlomo HaMelech all came together. That's where they were found. Now, just want to mention one other thing. In the Psukim we learn, and we mentioned this before, that Shlomo HaMelech married different princesses of different nations, Baspari, and brought them into Eretz Yisrael, and they introduced Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael. And we need to understand, why did Shlomo HaMelech do this? Why did he marry Noshim Nochriyos, like the Pasuk says? So our understanding is as we mentioned before, Shlomo HaMelech was on a campaign in order to spread the Chochmah and the belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout the Bria. In those times, when a person wanted to make a treaty with different countries, so that's the way they did it. They did it by the different royalty intermarried with different people from different countries. That's what gave him a kesher to these countries. So therefore, Shlomo HaMelech, and we're not, the Pasuk criticizes Shlomo HaMelech for doing this, but once again, if we're looking for why he did it, what was his reason for doing it, this was all part of Shlomo HaMelech's campaign in order to bring the world to its tachlis. Malo kol aretz deya, by spreading the knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Bria, by creating the different bonds with the different people from the different countries, so that's how he was hopeful that he'd be able to bring people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, let's go back to this that we mentioned before, why the Avodah Zarah goes together, why the bittul of the Avodah Zarah goes together with the natural sciences. So as follows. We all know, and this is something that is common knowledge to us all, but somehow we don't bother to put it down in a practical way. We all know that when the Yidden went to Mitzrayim, they met up with the Chartumei Mitzrayim, the magicians that were found in Mitzrayim. And we know that many of the different supernatural things, nisim, let's call it, that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do, turning the water into dam and creating tzfardeya and so forth, the Chartumei Mitzrayim were able to do. Now, what's it does? And the answer is that just like we have with the koyach of kedusha, we have the ability for those people who reach the heights of kedusha, they're able to do nisim v'neflois using the koyach hakedusha. The same way, lahavdil elav havdolos, there are people who have the koyach hatuma, and using the koyach hatuma, they are able to do also different things which are what we would call supernatural, not found within the natural sciences. We learn in the Psukim, they can't do everything that we're able to do, but they're able to do. They're able to do many different phenomenal things. And so therefore, the Ramban tells us, in this, the Ramban is in the Sefer Teres Hashem Tmima, he says, before the Greeks came onto the world, he says, the Chochmah that was found in the world was the Chochmah that came about from what we call, I guess, this Ruchni is the Chochmah, the Chochmah of the Chartumim. If you want to know how is it that you could travel from place to place, you want to cross America, how do you go? Well, today you have to use an airplane and you have to use the laws of physics and so forth and so on in order to fly a plane. Well, that's now when we're into the natural sciences. In the time when they were into the supernatural sciences, and it was a science like ours, just it was a science that was lamalim in Ateva, you could also cross the country by flying. And maybe even, you didn't need an airplane. And the Gemara says that, the Gemara talks about how the Chartumim were able to bring camels across the country from one place out of the desert, you know, right on the table. You could bring a camel from one place to another. There's such a thing as what we call witchcraft, and it worked. The reason that we don't find it today, and I'm not positive we don't find it at all today, but we definitely, it's definitely not a thing which is common in the world today, is because Once they were mevatel, the Yetzirah of Avodah Zarah, that Koyach HaTumah that came from the Avodah Zarah in the world, so that also brought about the decline of the Koyach HaTumah that was found by the Chatumim. And we know that this is the balance that we have in the Bria. As Nevuah came to an end, and as we discussed in the time of the end of the first Beis Hamikdash, the first Beis Hamikdash, there were Nisim v'Neflois that took place, Lamalim and Ateva, there were Nevi'im that were found, and all this came to a decline little by little in the beginning of the Tkufa of the second Beis Hamikdash. In the same way, Zelu u'mazeh osa lekim, as you have the decline of the Avodah Zarah, the decline of the Koyach HaTumah, and so therefore you have the decline of the Chochmas HaChatumim that was found on the world. So now we're going to review again. Here we are living in Greece. Well, not us. But here we have this guy who's living in Greece. And there, all of a sudden, he finds himself in a position where he doesn't believe in the Avodah Zarah anymore. Not doesn't he believe in the Avodah Zarah, but he sees all around him a decline in the Chochmah that comes from the Chatumim, in the Chochmah that comes from the Koyach HaTumah. And they're not able to heal people, for instance. They used to heal people with the witch doctors. The witch doctors used to heal people. They used to do all kinds of phenomenal things using the Chochmah, the Slamalim and Ateva, and all of a sudden there's a decline. They can't do it anymore. And they're introduced. In Greece, they're introduced, first of all, to people who have deep philosophical understanding of what's going on in the Bria, and at the same time, they're introduced to people who had tremendous knowledge in the basic sciences, in the natural sciences. And now, in place of the supernatural sciences, they're able to use the natural sciences in order to develop the countries that they're in order to develop medicine, heal people using medicine now, build your bridges using physics, and so forth and so on. And therefore, in Greece was developed the Chochmas Yavam, what we call today Chochmas Yavam. But what we need to know is that Chochmas Yavam actually comes from us. The source of it comes from us. And we're going to learn, Mirtz Hashem, about how the Yevonim took this Chochmah, which came from us, and they tried to use it against us. But we understand at this point that this Chochmah is not a stira to, if anything, not only is it not a stira, it's mechazik us in our belief. Because we use this Chochmah in order to see the godliness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. So we'll stop.